my gosh, look at that intro. Wow. An
amazing intro.
Whoever made that intro is probably so talented and cool and wearing a really cool hat right now. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. You may notice a fancy new intro. That is our special gift to you this week on 8-Bits. Welcome to 8-Bits, y'all. I'm Chloe. Oh, I pointed in the right direction. And this is a show where every week we talk to some really interesting, cool people in tech that do really cool things. But before we get into our super special guest this week, Brandon, how you doing? How's your week been? Oh. It's been a whole week since last we spoke.
I know. I am so good. Having just a great day. And part of that is we have upped our game at 8-Bits.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody saw the awesome new intro, but we also have a website. So we have 8bits.tv. So that's it. That's the URL. https://8bits.tv, where you can find all the episodes from the back catalog. You can find for every episode, we have the podcast. So if you just want to listen to the audio at 3x speed like I do, go for it. We've got links to the video live stream, so kind of like you can see us right now, and also a complete transcript. So if you're ever curious about what we chatted about, maybe you just want to control F something to be like, oh, I know Chloe mentioned Azure Functions.
I know Chloe talked about Beanie Babies.
All the time. But yeah, so you could just do control F, Azure Functions, and it'll jump you straight to the timestamp part in the conversation. You don't even have to watch the video. You can just read the video, if that's a thing. But really excited. We put a ton of work into this week. So hopefully everybody loves it as much as we do. Feel free to give us some feedback. Let us know what you think.
Please let us know. Like, if you need, I feel like we're giving people so many different ways to consume our content, Brandon. I feel like they can listen to us, they can watch us. What are we missing? We just need like an AR VR experience to add on to this.
So it's like you're in the studio.
We should have April on the show. April and Thomas can talk to us how to get that set up from our mixed reality team. That'd be cool. So let us know other ways that you want to be able to consume this show, and maybe we'll. But I love this now because people can listen to us when they're on the go. Maybe we show something visual. I hear a rumor today that we may be we may have some props that we're showing. Ooh. So people can listen in on their bike ride and then go home and see what we're talking about. So I'm just so excited. We've really just overnight upped our game. So check out the website.
it's about time, really. Yeah, we've been doing this for, you know, we're closing in on a year now. We started this in May, and that's only a couple months away. We're basically in March. So yeah, it's about time we have the website, podcast, all the options. You don't have to be limited to Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time to catch the live stream anymore.
Oh my goodness. I can't imagine listening to our podcast on 2x speed because I already talk so fast. Like I wonder if when you do that, it's just like, like a chipmunk. Let us know.
My laugh on 2x, 3x speed, it's like a cackle.
Oh my gosh. Well, now I'm going to go listen to the podcast on 2x.
Now you have to.
Now I have to do it. I think that'll be what I do on my walk today. Well, I'm super excited for our guest today. But before we bring them in, how has your week been? I know you've been slaving away on this website. It looks awesome. Any exciting things in the world of Brandon?
Oh gosh. I mean, the big news for me as a .NET C# developer, the .NET 6 preview just came out last week. So this is hot off the presses. You might be thinking to yourself, if you're also a .NET developer, like, hey, didn't .NET 5 just be released? And yeah, .NET 5 was taken out of preview into general availability back in November. But now we have the first preview available for .NET 6, and there's so many goodies in it, for especially if you're a Xamarin developer or a Blazor developer, and I can't wait to try it. I need to set aside some time now that we've got the website up and running. I've got nothing but free time, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that'll be fun. So you have a fun after this show. You're just going to be like .NET-ing it up, I imagine. Ooh,
I can't wait. Oh, and tomorrow. Speaking of .NET, is a whole .NET conference.
Really?
Yeah, there's .NET Conference, and it's a focus on Windows. And so if anybody out there wants to learn about how to make Windows apps using C Sharp, using .NET, I think there's some F Sharp courses all day tomorrow. .NET Conf, focused on Windows. I think it starts at 8 a.m. Pacific time and goes till 5 or 6 Pacific time. So all day, you kind of tune in. That's my plan. I'm going to tune in, put it on the TV in the background while I'm working, and just try to soak up all the goodness.
Yeah, fun. Is that going to be, is that on Learn TV, or is that going to be, I wonder where we're hosting that.
Good question.
We'll find out. we'll put some deets in the chat.
As the host who's promoting it, I feel like I should, I should know that info.
But well,
if you
I
just
have,
Google it with Bing.
Yeah, Google it with Bing. I have a super exciting thing to tell you, Brandon. I don't even think I've told you this. So you know Shania Bot, right? We've talked about Shania Bot a lot on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen because I have a very important announcement to any Shania Bot fans out there. Now, if this is your first time joining us, I built Shania Bot with a friend of the show, friend of the pod, PJ Metz. And it's a really simple Twitter bot that we built together to teach PJ how to use Logic apps, but now he's hosting it himself, and we've learned all sorts of fun things about it. And you can go follow it right now. The username is bot_Shania, and it tweets "Let's go, girls" every morning to remind you to go in the morning. But Brandon, a very exciting thing happened last week. I got a little bored, and I made a new bot. And it's called It's Britney Bot, because I just watched the Britney Spears documentary, hashtag Free Britney. And and I was thinking, you know, what can I build that will spark a little bit of joy in people's lives? So I very quickly spun up It's Britney Bot. You can go follow it now if you'd like. It is a Twitter bot that I made in about under 10 minutes with Azure Logic Apps. And it tweets.
It's Britney Bot?
Yes, the handle is It's Britney Bot with two T's. So like very, very professional and classy here. and you can also check out the documentation on how I made this at aka.ms/It's Britney Bot with one T. But it's a really fun, simple little logic app that I built. That so I've got Shania now in the morning reminding me, let's go, girls. And now in the evening, I've got Britney Bot telling me It's Britney Bot's. New features coming every day, coming soon.
We have PJ in the comments talking about Ariana Bot.
Yes. Oh, yes. How could I forget?
Just taking over?
So she's not up and running yet, but you can. Ooh, is it Ariana Grande Bot? Ariana, PJ, let me know in the chat what the name of the bot is. But It's Britney Bot was inspired by Ariana Grande Bot, which is something that PJ and I worked on stream last week. And you can go check it out. But I'm not going to tell folks. What Ariana Grande Bot does, because you have to watch our stream to find out. Now, this isn't clickbait. This is sincerely because we don't want to pay all the hosting costs for people to keep clicking using our bot. But it's been really fun to play with BJ and build some of these bots. And now we're just building a bot army of pop culture celebrities. So everybody enjoy. Go follow It's Britney Bot. Go follow Shania Bot. And I should say Shania is bot_Shania on Twitter. And It's Britney Bot is It's Britney Bot with two T's. And sharing this not only because I really, really love these projects I've been working on, but our guest that we have on today, oh my gosh, I'm so excited because
she's not a bot.
She's not a bot. She's a real life human woman. But during this global Panera, I have met a lot of really, really great people on the interwebs due to different pop culture things that I have similar interests with. Like, I feel like Twitter can be a really garbage place sometimes, but I also can meet really wonderful, cool people. And I don't know if I've talked about it on the show before, but I've been watching a lot of 90 Day Fiancé, so much so that I bought this pillow to commemorate all of the seasons that I've – it says, I work so much work, to quote 90 Day Fiancé. And it's funny how the internet brings people together, because Jill and I met on Twitter. I think we connected on 90 Day Fiancé. We've now realized that we love a lot of similar pop culture things, including Britney Spears. So I'm very, very excited to have a like-minded human on the show to talk to us all about tech and what they do. So welcome to the show, Jill. Yay!
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh, our pleasure. We are so, so excited to have you on the show. Do you want to tell the folks at home a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So hello, I'm Jill Woolner. I am a technical recruiter-ish kind of person. I am the CEO and founder of my own company. So I work for myself, which partners with organizations to help them with all things people and recruiting. I like the plug. So Underpin is my company. I've been doing this only one company for about a year now. Same time started as the global panty. It's been great. And I'm super jazzed. And I feel very lucky. Twitter has made me a lot of great friends through the years. And I feel very fortunate, Chloe, that I got to meet you via Twitter. And we found out we have, oh my God, so much in common, including childhood of ice skating.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I should have gotten some images to show here.
I have a great one of me in at a practice one day that came up on my time hop not that long ago. It was like me in acid wash jeans ice skating. Yeah.
So cool. Oh man. I can just imagine, like, is that around the time like the Mighty Ducks movies were coming out?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Leaning into it. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is something that only I did, because I have never heard of anyone else partaking in this, but so I did figure skating and I competed, but there was also this thing called Precision Team that we had at Skate Town in Roseville. That's where the fancy skating rink was near Sacramento. And Precision Team was basically synchronized swimming, but with ice skaters. So like imagine like 20 kids like doing like kick lines and stuff, kind of the stuff that you would see in Disney on Ice, like when they do all the, or Reptar on Ice even, when they're doing the formation. And so I'll have to dig up some of that footage and maybe share it with folks.
Definitely. I did solo and I was in a group too, but it wasn't called Precision. I don't remember what it was called. But when you moved up the ranks, this is akin to like actually what I'm wearing now, because I put this patch on my sweatshirt myself. You would get a patch, and I had a jacket full of patches and I was feeling myself.
Jill, when I tell you I still have all my patches, I think I'm going to sew them onto my jean jacket.
Yes.
Bring it
so
back.
I'm curious. You're working in tech. It seems like we have a really similar kind of quirky, unique background here. How did you find yourself in this industry, from the skates to the tech? How did you get here?
So I found my way very randomly into tech. So I live in St. Louis, Missouri now. I say I'm from here. I'm an Air Force brat, but I did a lot of growing up in Southern Illinois. My skating days were when I lived in DC and then we moved out here. So I went to undergrad and grad school in the area. And I got my grad degree in what's called industrial organizational psychology, which is basically the study of humans in the workplace. My partner and I at the time weren't location tied. So we're just like, whoever gets a job first, that's where we'll go, which landed us in San Antonio, Texas, where they worked for the federal government. And I worked for a manufacturing company that made Slurpee machines.
Okay, this is important content. Brandon, I'm going to let you do follow-up here, because I'm at a loss for words on what, like, I have so many, like, Slurpee questions for you, Joe.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, to fill everybody in, I have a unique obsession with 7-Eleven as of lately. We recently moved, which is why if you've been watching the show, you've seen my background change. And our new house has a 7-Eleven just around the corner. So one block away, we can go grab. I kind of use it as like the office vending machine that I used to have. So like if I want to go grab a soda, grab some snacks.
A sensible LaCroix.
Yeah. And so I go to 7-Eleven way too much. It's one of those things where like the credit card starts to yell at you, like, was this you again? Like, yeah, it's still me. But
did you buy 25 nerds ropes, sir?
No. But Yeah, so I found out recently, and we'll let Jill confirm this, but that Slurpees and Icees, same machines.
Confirmed.
You heard it here first. Exclusive
news.
Yes. So and also the machines, the Icy, and sometimes they're not branded Icy machines at Target are same machine too.
Wow. So,
and almost all of them in the U.S. are made in San Antonio, Texas.
So what you're saying is National Slurpee Day, where all the Slurpees are free, technically all Icy's should be free because they're the same type of beverage. Wow.
Look, we are blowing minds. I can see, like, Prince in the chat says we need to tell the world.
I know.
Talk about Slurpee machines.
We broke this Slucy on the show.
So the fun part of work was that it definitely, like, in the cafeteria area, like, there were Slurpee machines that you could get free Slurpees all day. That kind of, like, loses its fun after not too long. And actually, it was a manufacturing facility, so, like, I was an HR coordinator, started temp, got on to full-time employment. And so I hiring was part of what I did. And I hired everyone from people who worked the line to executives. And so, and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, like, this is like how we're all doing it. You know, I say this all the time. One of my goals and why I get to know teams that I'm recruiting for is that my goal always is to not look stupid when I'm on calls with candidates, like, still to this day, like, and that's the goal always, just like, look smart enough. So fake it till you make it, which I think you and PJ were talking about in a podcast not that long ago, which I totally agree with. But so Perk, Slurpee machines, not Perk, the food and beverage industry is a good old boys network, just like tech ish and it is, there's dark parts of food and beverage.
Ooh. Oh man.
But an additional silver lining is I got to go, their conferences or conventions are full of, the conference room, the swag room is like 7-Elevens, dish, like convenience stores hyping the next snack.
Oh dang, wait, yes. Hold on. Oh,
wow.
Like I'm like picturing like Doritos tacos,
yes,
and like,
yes,
Taco Bell,
yeah,
level innovation.
Oh yeah. Anything you can imagine. It was pretty incredible to get to go to those like convention conferences.
I was thinking that when I went to South by Southwest like 8 years ago and I got to try the new McDonald's flavored fries, I thought I was in 2030.
you haven't had like the bacon wrapped hot dogs that they sit on the roller for a couple hours and
till they're just right,
questionably fresh.
I feel like there's something about purchasing it in that environment. Like, I don't know if y'all have been to Universal Studios. We're talking about theme parks really early on the show today. But one of my favorite places to go at Universal Studios Orlando is the Quickie Mart 7-Eleven kind of thing that they have in the Simpsons area, which they do sell Slurpees. Or I guess they're called Slurpees? No. What are they called in the Simpsons?
I can picture that it happening.
Squishies.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Man, we should have gotten Slurpees for the show.
We should have.
I'm getting one afterwards if anyone's
going there. So I was living my best Slurpee life in San Antonio, wearing like pantyhose to work, I had to give a training to admins, other admins, about like what to wear. It was, of course, all women. And it was like, it was bizarre, like it was in the 60s, but it was 12 years ago. And like about how not to wear too much perfume to work and things like that. Yeah, it was crazy. And so I generally kind of, you know, enjoyed the job and I got to learn a ton because I reported directly to the head of HR. So she just like let me in on everything. But this company was down the road from basically at the time, the only tech company in San Antonio called Rackspace. Ooh, and everybody in San Antonio in 2010 wanted to work at Rackspace, and they had their headquarters in an old mall, which was amazing. And everybody got to wear jeans and t-shirts there every day. And I was like, how do I get into technology? Like literally that was it. That was the dream.
I had a similar moment in my career where I was working as a salesperson at Yelp. It was one of my first jobs out of college. I got it through a Craigslist ad. And the minute that they told me all the deli meat and in the fridge and the Crystal Geyser was free, having come from the theater world and the arts world where you were so lucky if you got a slice of pizza at rehearsal, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to work in tech. Like, the snacks
There's
are
no
free.
Craft services at community theater? Yeah. Unacceptable.
No eating in costume.
Yeah, I felt like tech was this dream world. And I did what any good like recruiter does. And I figured out on LinkedIn who was hiring recruiters at Rackspace. I reached out to him and I did an interview, which was, I left work and did it in the, it was phone because I mean, no one was doing video interviews then. And it was in the parking lot of a Starbucks. And I impressed enough to come on site. And next thing you know, I'm a tech recruiter at Rackspace.
Wow.
Cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And remind me, Rackspace, they do, it's like
hosting
infrastructure,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So hosting, and there were one of the early hosting companies, and then, you know, had their heyday, and then weird things, and they gotten acquired and all sorts of weird stuff now. But yeah, it was a very, and it was like 6,000 people when I was there. So still the largest company I've ever worked for. And yeah, it was so fun. They told me, I remember vividly them telling me like the first day, you're going to hire Linux admins. And I was like, whoa, no clue what are those words? Of course. But like in the fake it till you make it realm, I was like, cool, of course. And so I was like reading and trying to learn. And I learn the best by talking to others. And I know when I kind of leaned in on what I'm good at, which is building relationships. And so I just started like going and hanging out with my Linux admin teams. And I was like, if you answer these questions for me, like I'll buy you lunch or buy you a drink or whatever. And then we just became friends. And so it became much easier for me to talk to candidates on the phone because I heard these people talking to each other and like understood their language. And a lot of people in tech are really like quirky and weird like me. And so I just like felt like I found my niche, and I have not regretted leaving the Slurpee biz ever since.
No more brain freezes. Yes. That's a plus.
So I know we have a lot of people on the show who have these like degrees that are very, very different from what they do by day, myself being one of them. Wasn't it last week? Our guest was telling us they had an art history degree, I believe, and they work at Microsoft. Right. I think it's really interesting that your degree is like highly applicable to what you do on a day-to-day basis, and yet you did not plan this career path. Like,
yeah,
for folks who are watching who maybe are thinking, you know, I want to get into tech, but I've got this like totally unrelated background. Like, how did you connect those dots?
Yeah. And I mean, I think for me, it's really important. Like, tech can feel exclusive on a lot of different levels. But also the one being people feel like they had to have grown up loving tech to be in tech. And that's also false. I did not grow up being like a gamer. Like, I played a few video games growing up in the 90s and stuff, but I wasn't a huge gamer. I didn't like tinker. I wasn't like a puzzle person, all of these things. But I really like interesting problems. I like building highly functioning teams. Like, I like the human aspect of it. And tech or not tech, every company has those types of needs. And I love connecting people with jobs. And so I think it's just about trying different things out. And tech fit me very well. Also, like the high-paced nature of it. Now I get to work remote. There's a lot of perks. And so even like those types of things, I just wouldn't let your background, whether that's schooling or like your upbringing and your like interaction with tech in general, dissuade you from this organization.
It's funny that you say you didn't grow up tinkering and doing stuff like that, because I, in following you on Twitter, Jill, I feel that you're very much a tinkerer. Like, you're always making cool Lego projects, and like I was on my show Adopt a Dev yesterday. We were chatting with Ro, and she does a lot of CSS front end type stuff that really becomes art. Like, it's this really interesting blending of like programming and art. And I've always personally thought of like coding is a lot like digital crafting in a way. So I get so excited when I see, you know, folks that are working in tech, like kind of finding what that is, like what piece of tech suits them the best. And I feel like in a lot of ways, Jill, you're kind of like a casting director in a way, to use my acting hat here, because you get to find and identify really cool, interesting people that get to fit into these literal roles. So when you're doing, like when, as a recruiter, when you're doing that kind of work and trying to match those things, it sounds like you were having conversations with the team to figure out what, you know, what is a Linux developer and things like that. But I know from the mentorship that I do and some people we've had on the show, it can be really hard to break into this industry. It's very the chicken and the egg thing, right? Yep. How do you deal with those kind of candidates? Maybe the ones that don't have like the super, super long resume of experience, but they have applicable experience that you see potential in.
Totally. And so, I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways. One thing I want to say too is like, I feel very fortunate to be in tech because I feel like tech has opened my eyes to these types of hobbies and things that I didn't know about, or maybe like, I'm very into Lego now, like very into Lego. And I was not growing up. And I was like, why? I feel like, why did anybody tell me how freaking awesome Lego is?
Same.
or like, this is Mario that I made out of perler beads. I'm like, this was so fun to do. But so tech has opened my eyes to that. I was definitely like the kid growing up who, and Chloe, I know we're the same, who was like, writing newsletters for the class when no one asked me to.
I just have a Pokemon newsletter through an AOL chat room that I joined.
Yeah, I'm just like handing them out in third grade and people are like, okay. But I do think so getting into tech is all about like exploring and finding what you're passionate about. I guess passionate is kind of like buzzwordy right now, but like finding where you have fun and spending time there. And so when you're trying to get your foot in the door, whether that's like working on some open source stuff or just working on projects of your own, or like watching y'all's videos about building these bots and like doing that, like it's about being able to make like tangible things as well that you can put on a resume that help get your foot in the door too. And learn to talk about those as if those are projects you did at work. Communication is the number one thing that is important to recruiters for early career candidates. If you can't talk about what you've done or what you want to do, even if it's broad, like that will end a conversation very quickly.
Yeah. Specificity, definitely key. Knowing what you're looking for.
Well said. But and I know this is going to be different for everybody, but in your experience, what's the best way to kind of gain that knowledge?
Yeah, so I think that whatever pathway you take into tech, whether it's like traditional CS or doing some type of like boot camp or online learning, like a Code Academy, or there's many, many, many out there. It's just about, I think, building a community within the space that you're in and learning what other people's interests are, and then figuring out like how you can riff off those, whether it's collaborating with your teammates, whether it's just like hearing about something they're interested in. You're like, oh, I could explore that even on my own. And just like being very aware of what's around you and building those networks and communities in whatever space, whether it be in person, online, et cetera.
Yeah.
I love that advice. And that's something I found really true. Like when I first got into mobile development, particularly with Xamarin, I just started going to meetups. I mean, now everything's online, but just kind of joining the communities. I started downloading all the Xamarin podcasts I could find. Searched on Reddit. There's a Xamarin Developers Reddit. There's Xamarin Developer Facebook group, and just kind of immersed myself in it. And you're totally right. It's interesting how much you can just almost absorb. Like I wasn't necessarily studying, right? I wasn't opening manuals. I wasn't necessarily even coding all the time yet, but just kind of hearing what's going on in the community, seeing what folks are making, you learn what's out there, what's possible. And then as you meet more and more people, you now have this support group too, that can help. So when you're first getting started, you don't know everything. Heck, you don't know anything. So you can, you can ask around, ask questions, and leverage the community.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say the fun thing about tech as well is like the barrier to entry can be quite low in just playing around. So meaning not like getting a job, but like if you wanted to learn about something open source or see a project that somebody is working on, or try a new language. You can try it out for a few days and decide, actually, that's not my language. Let me try something else. And there's a lot of free resources out there where you don't have to put in money up front. Like how I would equate it to is like, I'll bring it back to Lego. Like I didn't initially know I was going to like Lego. So I bought a small set. And so now I buy very expensive sets because I know I'm not going to try to put it together and be like, oh, I actually hate this. And this was a waste. I buy a tiny Brickheads and play with that for a little while. And so like just not, I think starting off broad and keeping in mind like that you don't need to be like sinking money into a lot of things is really like something good to keep in mind.
Yeah. I was just going to say on the community front, so when I first started in tech, I had never used Twitter before. My boyfriend was working at Twitter at the time, and he said, you should get on here. This is where developers are having a lot of conversations, and you can get involved with the community a little bit more. And I was like, ugh, I don't want to use this app. It's stupid. 5 years later, I'm on Twitter 24/7. But I think, honestly, you know, beyond what we talked about earlier on the show about like connecting with people, like meeting friends on there, I have found a lot of people on Twitter doing the work that I am now aspiring to do. So an example would be, I love Danielle Baskin. I've talked about her on the show many, many times. She makes all of these hilarious, quirky, funny, interesting technical projects that always make me laugh and always keep me like entertained. And I draw a lot of inspiration and from, especially I think now during this pandemic, you know, we're all stuck at home. We're not going to meetups. We're not going to events. And I really view Twitter, well, some days are a little bit of a trash fire than others, but I view Twitter almost like the conference floor of the general community of tech. You know, sometimes the discourse can be a little crazy, but that being said, I think something that I miss about going to conferences and doing meetups and events is being able to have those one-to-one and one-to-many conversations that you would have in the hallway or like waiting outside the bathroom or whatever that may be. And in an interesting way, Twitter has sort of become the water cooler chat of the global Panera in a way.
Very much so. And it's cool to be able to see on Twitter and like on TikTok. I'm actually not on TikTok because I'm too old and they aged me out of it. but actually I'm not on TikTok because I know I'll get obsessed with it. And I was like, I don't need another thing.
You're like, I don't need to be singing sea shanties 24/7, yes. Brandon. Well, I
mean, but you could.
But it gives you insight into, like you said, these projects that people are working on and just like understanding more what happens in tech. So I started using Twitter when I was in grad school, like when it first came out. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, when Twitter started, you had to text in your tweets. Like this is early Twitter.
Oh, way back in the day.
Way early. And so I was just kind of like, me and my partner would play around with it. And I used it. I'm sober now, but I was very into beer at the time. And was like, there was an app that would like, log what kind of beer I drank and then it would tweet about it. I forget the name of it.
Untapped. Yeah.
Untapped. And so like that's the main way I use it. And then when I got to Rackspace, engineers were using Twitter a lot. And I was like, I want to talk to them, but I don't really know how. So I do what anyone does when you first start on Twitter. You're just like being 100% lurker and like seeing the interactions they have and seeing how they talk to each other, what they're working on. And then one day you just like work up the nerve to like respond back about something. Cause you're like, oh, they're talking about something I know about. I'll do it now. And then it just like kind of steamrolled from there. And Twitter very much became the platform of choice for me. It's where I have, like, I've hired a ton of people from it. I've gotten jobs through Twitter. It's really a positive and negative community, like you said, Chloe, in many ways. But it really, me as a recruiter, and in many ways, an outsider always still in tech, no matter how many years I'm in the industry, because recruiters have a super bad rap, that I have this like inside preview into what's going on in the edge space and continue to like, if I'm talking to a candidate last week and I mentioned something that I knew was going on at their company and someone I sourced, and they were like, oh my gosh, how'd you know about that? And so it's a way to continue to like impress candidates and it like keep up as well, which I really like.
So what you're saying is I'm not a regular recruiter. Yeah. I'm a cool recruiter.
Yeah.
And you touched on something I'd love to dig a little deeper into. The reputation of recruiters. I'd love to know kind of what is that reputation and how do you think it came about? And if there's any recruiters watching,
I would like to make a comment here that before I got into tech, I'm a former recruiter. I was a recruiter for a hot second of my career. I had no idea about this distaste for recruiters until I became an engineer. But I loved recruiters because that's how I got jobs. And now I feel like the culture in engineering is very like, ugh, recruiters. What is that?
It's very cool to hate recruiters. It's annoying. Like, I get it. I get it in some ways. But the backstory for me, from what I can glean, is that especially agency recruiters, they're set up. The industry is set up for them to look like shit because they are, and I have never worked at an agency myself. I've only in-housed, and then now I guess I kind of agency could run my own biz, but they are consistently given job descriptions from someone else, given no access to the teams, and then told like the sale stockroom floor or whatever, you have to have these many numbers, you have to make these many calls, these many emails, you have to have this many candidates. And so like, of course they're spamming people. This is how they make money. This is like, they're making just like, they're working on, you know, commission. And so
for folks who don't know what a sourcer is, I was a sourcer for, I think, 3 or 4 months of my life. And it was literally my job to comb through LinkedIn, find keywords of words that I didn't know the meaning of, aggregate them all into a spreadsheet, give them to the real recruiters to reach out to. So it's very, it's interesting to hear you say this, because I think that there's a huge, I think of myself back then, pre-engineering, when I was a recruiter, I didn't know what a majority of the technical terms were. And I probably looked like a total goof, like being like, do you have 2000 years experience with Docker? I'm just asking, you know, with pants. Yeah.
And actually, Sam in the comments brings up a good question as well. Like, what's the best approach with communicating with a recruiter that's reached out to you first?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm always an advocate for talking to recruiters, seeing what, I mean, so it, there's two types of recruiters. So there's agency recruiters who work for an agency who then have clients that are many organizations that they're hiring for. And then there are in-house recruiters that like, this recruiter works at Microsoft, so they only hire for Microsoft. And because Microsoft is so big, likely they hire like a specific set of software engineers at Microsoft, because it's a huge company. And so depending on the type of recruiter, you can kind of set your expectations that way. A lot of agency recruiters won't tell you the company that they're hiring for, which seems skeezy, but that is because if you then as a candidate apply to the role without them, they make no money. So that is why they are skeezy. But if you're making pennies on the dollar commission base and you need that paycheck, like, they do what they got to do. So I feel like, anyways, the industry is set up against them. But so I'm always like, I am always one to, communicate with recruiters, try to get some more information, and just see, you know, what's out there as well. Like, please be nice to recruiters.
Please be nice to recruiters. Have a blog post that I wrote a while ago that is called How to Succeed at Being a Crypto and Bitcoin Influencer Without Really Trying. And it is about how by sheer chance, I got copied and pasted onto an article that was, here's the top 100 women in crypto and Bitcoin that you should follow. I don't have any knowledge on that subject. Took about a month or two for me to get removed from this list. And I still get inbound recruiter requests about crypto and blockchain and Bitcoin on a weekly basis. So I empathize with the recruiters because I was there. I was that girl, like, yeah, combing through LinkedIn and trying to hit my numbers. But yeah, it's tough because, yes, as engineers, we're like, oh, this is annoying. But like, I think it's important to have empathy and understand that this is just kind of the life of a recruiter.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can find some change in that. Maybe we just need to teach some of these recruiters to code.
and some, I've known many a recruiter has left recruiting to become a software developer because they're like, already recruiting for these roles, they're like, I can do this and maybe people will hate me less. And so, but just like anything, there are people who are really great at recruiting and there are people who don't try that hard at recruiting, just as any profession. I think one of the things that I'd like to see change for in-house recruiters too is being less like just specifically data metrics focused, because I really feel like that's only part of the story. So beyond like the number of candidates that you're getting and are reaching out to, but like, how good are their experiences? How happy are your hiring managers? How happy are candidates? And some teams do that, but a lot of teams don't. So it's hard if you're not like gauging the right things for recruiters and then incentivizing, you know, shitty work.
Yeah, we have a great comment here that says, historically, recruiters and sourcers were largely incentivized for quantity rather than quality.
Totally.
Yeah.
Also, hi, Amy.
Hi, Amy. Yeah, well, it makes me so happy when we meet someone who's working in this side of tech who really like is that not only looking out for the candidates, but looking out for other recruiters as well. So I love that you're sharing this. And what I've been loving about your Twitter lately, Jill, is you've been sharing some really fun, interesting kind of questions that you've posed to your followers. One recently was, tell me about something earlier in your career that still makes you laugh. And I was going through all the responses and having such a good time reading about these things. I would love to know, like, as a very kind of visible public woman working in recruiting on the interweb, like, how has it been interacting with different stories like this? And like, are you finding that, you know, there's some interesting tales from the crypt recruiting stories?
Oh my gosh. Every recruiter has some weird, weird stories, for sure. And the funny thing about Twitter too is like, it's never the tweets you expect for people to engage with that they actually like engage with. So like, I thought that was an interesting one, but I was like, oh wow, this took off a lot more than I thought. But yeah, I think in tech in general, it's just like such a strange world. Recruiters and HR departments in general, one of the many woes or that you'll hear, especially being in the high tech space, and we are like so privileged to be in this space and get like crazy luxuries at work that other people don't, and yet people constantly complain. Like the amount of, especially because I've been a head of people at companies too. So I have, like I said, HR and recruiting background. But like the amount of complaining that will just happen about like types of snacks that are available, or like, you know, like where the trip was this year or that kind of thing is very funny to me. But yeah, there's tech is full of strange woes.
As a former office manager, I think it should be a legal requirement that everyone working in an office has to be office manager for a day.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is my wife is also in HR and also head of people. And she came home one day and she's like, I had to explain to somebody today that we couldn't buy another brand of coconut water. Because we already offered six different brands of coconut water. And that if they wanted that brand, they could just go next door and buy it.
When I tell you that so I worked as an office manager in 2015, and I spent a majority of my time loading LaCroix into a fridge. And when I tell you it took me probably 3 years to be able to enjoy LaCroix again, because I kept getting asked, can we please get coconut LaCroix in the office? But it, if you've ever ordered coconut LaCroix, you know it is a very rare flavor to find. It has stuck with me. It's kind of amazing, you know, and I think for folks like myself and like PJ and Joel who like haven't been in this space so long, when we come in, we're just like, I'm sorry. What?
it's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And the fact that I had to, I think a year ago, go through about 100 different free tote bags and t-shirts that I had been given over the course of my time going to tech conferences versus, you know, it's wild. Tech can be, I think sometimes being in tech, we don't see how ridiculous it can be sometimes.
Totally. And I think kind of to tangent a little bit, but one of the things that I enjoy, and I think what makes me different about like in tech with my background is, and y'all are this way too, but it's like, I'm very human focused much more than I am tech focused. I'm actually like not that interested in the tech. I'm much more interested in like, are we treating people well at organizations? How are people interacting with each other? Is this a safe space? Like, is, you know, and then like very like random things, like we're talking about privilege and like the LaCroix and stuff, like are, cause I've heard this, like, are the amount of luxuries that we are given at this organization, whatever happens to be, like actually putting off people or making people uncomfortable who come from lower SES or like lower socioeconomic statuses, and they've never like encountered this type of wealth and like amount of food and things like that before. Like those types of problems are really what drive me and entice me about technology. And I think because it has been an afterthought in our space. And so there's so many more problems to solve there.
I mean, the AI has not taken over yet. And I think that sometimes we forget that we're building most of the time technology for humans. So ideally, yeah, the humans who are working on this are good humans, good and nice, empathetic humans who care about the well-being of other humans. So I appreciate the work you're doing in this space, Joel. It's having an eye and an ear and a brain on that is very important. We had someone in the chat ask about our Beanie Babies, though. So.
Oh. She's here.
Yeah.
We're here. Yeah, we had SS said, I need to see the purple bear, please. I had that one, but lost it. We brought our Beanie Babies to share with y'all. Jill, do you want to give some explanation for the importance of this particular Beanie Baby?
Yes. So this is the Princess Diana Beanie Baby. Very important to us 90s children. It was very hard to find. There's actually many different varieties of the Princess Diana, like depending on tags and stuff. I've looked into this. Yeah. And so some are very worth a lot and some are worth very little. Mine is worth very little. Don't let the case fool you. She's worth very little. But yeah, so and the backstory to mine was when my parents recently moved into a new home, my mom found it and I told my wife immediately, this is going in our living room. And so I brought it up for the show.
And I'm just obsessed with Beanie Babies and also started making Beanie Baby taxidermy, which you can check out on my Twitch channel. I'll be making these soon. But it's interesting. The reason we brought this, y'all, is Jill and I have very similar upbringing and background, which I think is what made us gravitate towards each other on Twitter and the interwebs. But Jill, we both have a very similar kind of aesthetic vibe. We're very much into pink sparkly things, Britney Spears, pop culture. We can feel I don't want to speak for you, but I feel a little bit like a fish out of water in this industry. Like, totally. How do you navigate working as a recruiter, kind of being that first point of contact? How do you navigate that? Like, I imagine there's a lot of biases that come into play there. What is that like for you?
Totally. What's really interesting is when I think back to my earlier days in tech, I see myself morphing into like playing a role that wasn't me. where I have real glasses now, but I used to wear fake glasses because I thought it would look smarter, because I was very self-conscious about looking dumb around engineers, because I've had a few really bad experiences where engineers were brutally mean to me for being a recruiter and like not having a CS degree or whatever else. And so I was very self-conscious about that. I also like always dressed in jeans and t-shirts, never anything that made me look like femme at all. And like, I was a lead conference recruiter. I was always traveling around. And so that was then. And as I kind of grew into myself a little bit more in tech, I felt more comfortable being myself. And so now I try to like probably push the boundaries of that in an effort to, most of the things that I do, this will get philosophical for a second, because I've had some, you know, like ups and downs in life. In general, I always think about like, if tiny Jill had known me as adult Jill, like, would she feel better and like feel connected to someone? And so I always talk about that I'm gay, that I grew up with an eating disorder, that I, you know, am not technical, that I'm weird, that I love Lego, et cetera, and that I'm bisexual. And so all of these things, because I want to make connections with people, because I know that tech can be very, make a lot of people feel alone. And so that is like my goal, is so that like even Jill early in the industry, if she had maybe seen me, would have felt like, oh, I could, you know, I don't have to wear t-shirts all the time, even something as simple as that, that I maybe fit in here. Cause it is tough.
Yeah. My heart just grew 300 sizes hearing that. I love
to reach to the screen and just give you a hug right now.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot about that as well. I think about what role models did I have, Lil Chloe have, to look up to in tech? And the only one that I can think of is Gadget from Chippendale Rescue Rangers. And that's an animated chipmunk. So of course I didn't see myself in this industry. So I love the authenticity that you bring to this industry, Jill. And I hope that because of you, a young person out there gets involved in Legos a lot earlier, because they see how cool your Super Nintendo Lego build is, because you all, it's really, really cool. So and cool. You need to check it out on our Twitter.
And I think too, like as being a recruiter, because a recruiter is not a cool job in tech, we see this discourse all the time on Twitter of like what engineer types of jobs are cool or not cool. And so it's like, there's space for all of us. And so I even want like someone, a tiny Jill, to see like, oh, tech recruiting, that could be cool. And or insert whatever type of engineer. Like, it's not a very specific thing. Like, there's not one type of okay in the industry.
Yeah, I love that.
And I know we've haven't been shining the best light on recruiters, but I do want to share Bernard's comment here in just saying, I have nothing but positive experience with recruiters and definitely feel like they are in my best interest. So,
yay. Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy.
Thank you. Yes.
We love recruiters. I think in the same way, having been I worked in sales at Yelp. Whenever I get a telemarketer call, I'm not quick to hang up because I'm like, I'm so sorry. I know. My heart goes out. We are coming to the close of the show. So we have to bring up a very important topic on this show that we address every episode, which is theme parks. Jill, ooh, we've got a Pikachu cameo in the back. Hello, Pikachu. Cute dog alert. Jill, do you have any thoughts on theme parks? Do you have any favorite rides or theme parks?
Of course I do. Growing up in St. Louis, my theme park was Six Flags.
Okay.
So there's one right outside the city, like 30 or 40 minutes. So love Six Flags, and Mr. Freeze was my favorite growing up, which is the one where it goes like forward and then goes backwards.
Oh my gosh. I'm binging this right now.
This is a roller coaster?
A roller coaster. Yes.
Mr. So you get to do the whole thing twice.
Yeah. And then you like kind of, when you go forward, then you kind of go up in the air and you like sit for a minute just so your stomach can drop enough. And then it's like,
right.
Whoa. Okay. So we got a coaster girl here.
I love roller coasters.
Wow. Mr. Freeze reverse blast.
Woo.
That sounds like a Slurpee.
Yeah. It's like kind of like the Baja Blast.
And wait, so Six Flags, was that also an animal theme park? Our Six Flags here in the Bay Area was an animal theme park as well.
No, it was really? Just like rides. And then there was a, I can't remember what it's called, a water park next to it too.
Ooh. Gosh, what I do, I miss water parks, y'all. If I could sit at a lazy river right now, just hanging out, living my truth, that sounds nice. That sounds
a nice warm day. Yeah, it sounds lovely.
So, Jill, what is the scoop on where people can find you on the interwebs and stuff? Where can they come and check out all the cool things that you're doing and stuff that you're sharing?
Yeah, so I am on Twitter. Whoa, there we go. That's my main at Jill Woolner, very active on there. I also started streaming on Twitch a few weeks ago, and I'm going to stream again on Friday. I do Lego builds. I do Lego builds and talk. So
what are you building this, your next stream?
So I don't know if I'm going to do another Brickheads or if it comes in time. I got the dinosaur fossils, which is like a really cool build. I'm very excited about. We have like a Lego shelf in the room over there. So it's all to me. I'm like, what will look good on the shelving? That's the stage in life I'm at. And yeah, so Twitch. I also recently started a Substack where I write about interviewing and tips and tricks and all that kind of jazz. Those are my main ones that you'll probably find have the most content in them.
Jill Woolner. So
Jill Woolner.
That's on Substack, on Twitter, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, yes. Boom. Hit me up on LinkedIn.
Yes. Ooh, PJ is asking, what is Substack?
Oh, so Substack is like a blogging platform or a writing platform, basically. And so you can have, like, it can be subscription-based. So basically, you can have free content on there and also paid content and a little bit of both. So it basically has a back end of Stripe built in so that you could easily, like, charge people if you wanted to.
Amazing. Oh, cool. I think we need to do a Lego stream collab soon, Jill. I keep refreshing for the Lego flower bouquet. I want that bonsai tree. That's on
I meant to bring up the flower bouquet from downstairs, but I totally forgot. Yeah.
We just finished. It took the entire first half of the Global Panini, but we just finished the giant Jurassic Park build, complete with Jeff Goldblum, little figurines and stuff. And I'm really excited to start on the Nintendo one that you crank and the one that you have.
The Nintendo one is so great. My wife is we work on them separately. That's the kind of couple we are. We'll be in the same room listening to a podcast, working on our separate builds. But she's making the grand piano that plays music.
What?
Yeah, it's honestly amazing. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess I'm going to be spending some time on the Lego website after this show. What's your favorite build that you've done?
The Nintendo TV with the crank. It's so great.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. That's going to be my weekend, I think, y'all. Building a Nintendo Lego. And let's see. We've got a couple more minutes left here. I'm trying to think. What else do we need to share with the people at home? I would say follow Jill on Twitter. Like, excellent Twitter. Always asking, like, the awesome questions and posing. Just making me laugh a lot, which I need during this the year 2021. But I've really, really been enjoying all your posts, Jill. I'm so happy that we have someone. We talk a lot about on this show about opening the front door for people and making sure that we're, you know, there's so many barriers to entries for folks to get into this industry, be it recruiting software or just like not having exposure to tech in general. And I super appreciate all you're doing to help open the door for all kinds of folks. So thank you for all the work that you do.
Yeah. And don't forget, so Jill's got her own company now, underpin.company. And just really wanted to show, you can go to underpin.company.
Oh, yeah. So nice.
And there are all these open roles you can reach out to Jill about if you want to work at companies like Fire Hydrant, Code Academy. Get in contact with her today. Yeah. So that's
underpin.company.
Dot company.
Thank you.
And I'm super excited. I'm going to tune in for these Lego streams. I keep catching you at the very, very end of your streams, but I'm going to be in the chat asking all kinds of questions. Why did you choose this Lego? No. What? Amazing. Well, that's our show for today, y'all. Check out our awesome new website where you can see all of our previous episodes and a transcript of this show. You can search, you can literally control F and search Beanie Baby now. How amazing is that? Content on demand.
That website is 8bits.tv.
Yes. Thanks, y'all. We'll see you next week and have an excellent, excellent Wednesday.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.